Osiris.
Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of 8 cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
I'm Robert Ellis. I'm in Fort Worth, Texas. I'm sitting in my dingy office at the bar music venue that I own here. Putting out a new record in May. I think that's why we're talking.
Gene, I don't have an answer. Don't even know what to say. In between a sunny day and a nightmare, you might realize what it means to try.
Yeah, you have kids.
I now have a one-year-old, yes.
So I wake up at 5 a.m., and right now it's noon, so I've lived like 4 lifetimes. Just so much fucking shit today. Everything went wrong. My truck was acting all funny. And just everything was kind of fucked up today. And then I got home, like, just in time to hop on with you. And I was like, hey, Erica, I'm going to do an interview. She's like, I have this really important work call. And she's like, the Wi-Fi is already acting funny. She's like, can you not do it?
The baby got our bedroom, and we got the music room, I don't know, sunken den, rumpus room. So now, like, our bedroom is also, like, the recording area is also, like, where the piano and guitars are, is also where the podcast area is.
As of late, I've been doing as little as humanly possible to advance my, what I call my vanity career. making my own music and touring under my name and, you know, doing like that kind of shit. I've been doing the bare minimum to make sure that people still hear my music.
The kind of sentence that every management company and agency loves to hear.
I started my own record label, so I'm the boss of me. And so that's nice. I can't really get mad at anyone but myself.
You know, children like having dads around, I've heard.
Yeah, I don't know from experience, but I think they do. I mean, my kids seem to like it.
And it's clear as the sun is getting hazy that there's nothing you can do. You can't keep the night from falling. And when I look at you now, I know it's true. The darkness frightens even me.
Sometimes you have to confront that darkness and that silence head on so you cannot fear it any longer. You're listening to The Show on the Road, if you don't know already. And Robert Ellis, he's back. The pride of Lake Jackson, Texas, has a new record. It's called Yesterday's News that, as a delirious new dad myself, man, it really hit me right where it hurts. When I first caught up with Robert on our 2018 episode, we were both crisscrossing Europe. He was wearing a sweat-stained white tux, leaping across the stage from keyboard to guitar and leading the audience like they were in a circus with a ringleader's fire. Now, at first, I mourned the loss of this mischievous Texas piano man who no longer plays a single note of piano on this new record. And then I listened a third and fourth time. And in my delirium as a new dad, I could see him pacing back and forth in that moonlit hallway, hoping, praying that his little one would go to sleep so he could fade into dreams himself. And honestly, this record, Yesterday's News, has hit me at a particularly vulnerable time. I, as a songwriter, as a performer, am questioning whether I can keep doing this life and be a father and be a husband and be responsible. And as Robert and I discuss at length in this talk, sometimes you have to confront the idea that, well, the world may not need your stories. Maybe you need to write and create the things that you want to create first. After talking to Robert, I realized that I hadn't asked a pivotal question to myself in a long time. What is it that you actually want? What is it that you want to create? Maybe it doesn't have to set the world on fire, or make you famous, or make you rich. Maybe you can just tell the stories that lift you up, that make your daughter laugh, that make a few friends around you a little happier than they were before. Putting your ego and your ambition and your hopes and dreams aside, man, it's tough sometimes. But maybe admitting that you're yesterday's news is kind of a relief. Anyway, I'm so glad you're here on this sonic journey with me. My group Patio Club will be playing Hotel Cafe LA on June 3rd, and I'm going to hand it off now to Robert Ellis.
Gene, I don't have all the answers. I don't even know what to say.
Making a record, touring it, like, it's like an 18-month cycle of pain that, as far as I can tell, is not making music. Like, the making music part happens at the beginning. And then, yeah, like, you get to play for 45 minutes a day or whatever on tour. But, like, you're not creating things. And I'm just, I don't know. It's not where I want to be anymore. So I decided to start my own record label and just kind of start doing things that I want to do instead of things that I have to do, and, you know, figure out other creative pursuits. Like, I have this bar now, and I have, I'm in this building, which is a beautiful old building, and just adjacent to the bar is a recording studio that I produce records out of called Nile City Sound. So in the same building, we have a studio and the bar, and, you know, I fly out for little weekend shows every once in a while, and I raise my children, you know, try to be home as much as possible for my family.
Your mom taught piano when you were a kid, right?
Yeah. I was like, I don't remember a time where I wasn't playing.
Well, for the folks who first discovered you like I did through the Texas Piano Man record, which is, I think, one of the best records of the last 10 years, personally.
Thank you.
My wife is always annoyed every time we open a Topo Chico, even if it's in the middle of a party. I just start going, Topo Chico and Lima, at full voice.
Yeah.
Life good. Just feels kind of flat without it. Topo Chico and Lime. Topo Chico and Lime. Well, I'll be just fine. Put some ice.
They might be shocked, appalled, but also very interested to know that your new record, Yesterday's News, features a total of zero piano.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. And
it's almost like a jazz guitar lullaby odyssey.
Yeah. It's decidedly less fun than Texas Piano Man.
As a sleep-deprived dad myself, really, really hit me nicely right where it hurts. I think there's some really nice, again, you don't have to be loud to be hard hitting. You know, you don't have to be raucous to be deeply moving. a lot of us, I think, who've been trying to reconcile the fact that this huge pandemic and all these things stopped a lot of momentum for any sort of vanity career, like you mentioned, trying desperately to get people to listen to our stories and our music, my worldview. It's like the universe kind of slapped you back down for a few years there. You have to sort of realize that maybe the universe doesn't want to hear what you want to say.
Yeah.
And so you have to kind of make music wherever that lives. Because I think regardless of your feeling that you're maybe yesterday's news, you're always going to be creating something. There is an irony to this record, obviously, where you're sort of releasing that ambition, but also being like, yeah, but listen to this now.
Yeah, it's just like how you, I don't know, how you contextualize it for yourself. Like, I'm sorry, my office phone is ringing. I don't even know how to turn this thing off. It's how you contextualize that stuff for yourself that matters. And it, at least like creatively, that was a really important thing for me over the past few years, to just try and like remember why it is that I like to do this and right. what it is that I like about making music, and like do it for that reason only, you know, like to try and like, I don't know, just reclaim some ownership, like, not to disparage anyone in particular, but I do feel like we live in this world, music business world, and kind of society writ large, where you are judged by your accomplishments, achievements, success level. Like, I can't tell you how many times I've heard the conversation like, oh, so-and-so is here again. You know, last time they were here, they played the Troubadour, but this time they're playing at some smaller venue, like, oh, you know, like this fucking, like, just constant
yeah.
illusion of progress and, like, need to have your career go in this direction and, like, look a certain way. And I, you know, just the whole fucking thing is stupid to me. Like, I'm sick of trying to, every record, everybody around you tells you that this record is going to be the one that changes things. This is going to be the different one. Like, this one's really great. It's going to break through. This is the one yeah. where you're going to do SNL. And this, you know yeah. what I mean? I just feel like that voice is insidious and, like, starts to live inside your head and subconsciously inform your decisions in regards to artwork. You know, like, in regards right. to the things you make, like, without even knowing it, you start to try and make sure that you've got at least one song that feels like a single, and that the record's at a certain volume and a certain excitement level, and like mm-hmm. you want shit that you'll be able to play for someone and have them go, fuck yeah, this is awesome. And like, part of this whole record for me and this phase of my life is just, I don't know, just like sort of intentionally being like, no, I'm not gonna, I don't want to play that fucking game. I just want to make music that I think is cool and release it out into the world, and it'll find its place, hopefully. But if it does, it's not going to be because it was loud or exciting or, you know, like a singable summer hook.
Right.
You know, like that kind of shit.
I gave it a go. Yesterday's news.
Well, I think the idea of being yesterday's news, there's a mourning, right? Because like you're saying, I shot for the moon. You know, I really gave it a go. I went for it. And I'm going to be in that place where I'm just sort of out of your mind, right? And it's a place I know very well because that's where pretty much everyone lives.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like nobody is thinking about Robert Ellis most of the time, but there was a moment where it felt like everyone was.
Yeah.
And now I have to embrace that maybe that quiet place where you are going to be most of your life is an okay place to be, you know? And that's a really hard thing to do. I think there's moments throughout this record where there's that fear of silence, right? The fear of no applause, no response. And believe me, I'm with you on that sort of humiliation or trepidation of like, why aren't you selling more tickets than you did before? Why? Yeah. You know, it's like you get these questions from your management, your agency, your fans, you know, why are you playing this smaller venue? Why aren't you being played on the bigger radio station? You know, it can feel obviously like the universe or your fan base or people are forsaking you, are rejecting what you're doing. How are you going to play these live? Like, do you have a plan of how this sort of will be rolled out? I mean, obviously, when you recorded it, it's mostly you and upright bass and maybe, well, we got some spiritual little bells, you know?
Spiritual percussion, yeah. Well, we're booking a handful of, like, weekend dates through the late summer and fall, and they're mostly going to be in listening rooms, and I'm playing some jazz clubs.
Cool.
Across the country, like places that wouldn't normally have artists like us. And I've just been kind of like reaching out and being like, can we do a ticketed show in here? And like, I don't know. That's kind of where I want to live, is in that zone of like, you know, I just think I'm going to have for the rest of my career an audience. They're not necessarily going to be huge. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I'm really psyched about that because it's like, just getting the exact people in a room that I want to hang with. You know,
yeah.
Like, that's kind of the vibe.
When you feel in the mood, you'll know where to find yesterday's news.
Well, I think there was like, and sometimes the shows that you don't expect to be full of energy often are the ones that are the best of the tour. I mean, we did a show at this place, Ramshead on Stage in Annapolis, Maryland, which would probably be a great place for you to go.
You know,
sits maybe 250, but you know, maybe 150 will feel packed. And the only show that they had available, which we needed to fill, was a Saturday 1 p.m. show.
I love that.
And I was like, why would, what? Okay. You know, because this other show in New York fell through. It was like, all right, let's do this. They're going to pay our same rate. Okay.
Yeah.
I have some friends in DC whose families will come up and it'll be like a family show. Now we're playing pretty rockin' seven piece soul funk rock and roll, in with some folk harmony stuff in there, but like feels a little jarring for a 1 p.m. show, maybe.
Yeah, totally.
But like that show, I think, was my favorite of the run because people were so dialed in. They were so excited that they could actually see a show when they wanted to go to a show. Most people, you know, especially older folks, they don't want to go out at 9, 10 p.m.
Yeah.
You know,
totally.
There was kids dancing in the aisles. You know, it was a really fun experience. And I think sometimes playing, even if it's a small audience, but if the audience is really there for you and really listening, it's the most rewarding thing possible. And I think, you know, an opening song like Gene, like you have on your record, I mean, you have to really pay attention. It's like, you know, you're telling a short story, basically. I mean, these lyrics that were sent over to me are not in lyric form. They're like, it's like an essay or something, you know?
Yeah, totally.
You know, and again, you have that anxiety of sort of that darkness, that emptiness that is scaring you that you have to face, you know? it feels like maybe you're talking to one of your children, or, you know, there's this dialogue, I think, between you and maybe almost like a version of yourself in the future. Tell me a little bit about that opening track, because it really was moving for me.
Thank you. It was written to or for my oldest son. Definitely I'm talking to myself a little bit, which you will experience and probably have already experienced. But as your kid gets older and you start like teaching them things, telling them things, like,
right,
you realize that all the shit you're saying is good advice. And like, I don't know, there's something about being a parent that really forces you to like look at yourself in the mirror and really like, it's difficult for me to tell my kids to like be zen and live in the moment and like do everything with intention and passion if I'm not doing it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I don't know. Just, it forces you to like, you kind of wake up. And then on the flip side of that, from the day they're fucking born, you start to see the world through their eyes as a brand new person, which is just the most remarkable thing on the planet. You know, like seeing them see a fucking dog for the first time, you know, like interact with a puppy. You're just like, I mean, I personally get into a pretty stodgy sort of like disgruntled state, especially when I'm working a lot. I tend to be pretty neurotic and like, you know, things kind of irritate me. And I just don't feel like when I'm with my kids, that's acceptable. And it kind of forces me to be in this other state,
right,
with it, like experiencing the world as this really exciting, beautiful place.
Right.
And so anyway, that song is kind of written, you know, for my oldest son. And it is directly about just this idea that I don't think when he was born, he had anxiety. I don't think that any of us are born with anxiety. I think, yeah, we like cry when we're hungry or when we have to shit or whatever. Like, we cry when something is wrong. But in general, anxiety is something that I feel like we teach them. We teach them to worry about what is going to happen next Tuesday. You know what I mean? Like, it's just something that it comes later. And so to me, the song was kind of like just a way of saying something that I don't feel like I heard enough as a kid, which is that like things are very scary and I am anxious, and like, it's okay to feel those things. And the person that you look up to and think is okay is actually dealing with the exact same shit that you're dealing with.
Right.
But you know, there's also the last chorus of that tune has a turn in it, that I think for me speaks to just like the motivation, like the justification for why any of us in this fucked up, insane world with a lot of anxiety and turmoil in it would still want to have children. The last chorus, you know, it says like, they'll say you can't hold up the world when there's no ground below you, but they don't know you. Like, just this idea that I think that it's something that can be overcome, and that it's possible that our children could fix this whole broken thing. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
just to like encourage him to look at the world every day as an opportunity to like find beauty and to make it something better.
Put that on a t-shirt.
The darkness frightens, 'cause it's hard to see. Your stomach tightens, it's hard to breathe. They'll say you can't hold up the world when there's no ground below you, but they don't know you.
Yeah, well, I think the thing that kids, I mean, I only have one, and that'll be it. But I think that what children give you is, even in your darkest moment, it's like you could not imagine yourself loving anything more than this little creature. like, we got this dog during the pandemic, and she's a adopted pit bull mix who's really sweet to us but kind of a dick to everyone else. And I just remember having this feeling like, I don't know that I could love another creature more than I love this dog. And then the baby came, and I was like, all right, I think now I love this baby like almost dangerously much, you know?
Yeah, totally. I mean, not to be shitty, but like, I kind of felt the same way. Then you have a kid and you're like, yeah, fuck that dog. If it came down to it, I would totally just fuck that dog forever. It's like it's a different feeling. I don't know how to explain it.
Well, I think, again, like, having more love in the world is probably the reason you have kids, right?
Yeah.
Hopefully they become cool, helpful people and not sociopaths, you know, but we'll never know until it happens.
you don't have any idea, but I do feel every day like there is an opportunity to just, like, I don't know, try and do more than I had a really great childhood in a lot of ways, and my mother was fantastic, you know, and like, I loved her dearly, but there were just a lot of things growing up. One, indoctrinated into religion, and two, a very sort of conservative Southern community. I now, after years of fucking working on it, am starting to get to this place where I feel pretty good most of the time. And I'm just like, God, I hope that Buddy can just start there. Like, what if I had started there when I was like 14, instead of having to wait till I was fucking 30 to start living my life in this way that wasn't overcome with anxiety and guilt. And you know, like,
it's always hard to know where the balance lies, because if you are, you know, overly fawning and supportive of your kids, sometimes they don't feel like they can do anything on their own or something, you know, whereas you had to rebel against a lot of forces, but you also had enough confidence in yourself that, I mean, you basically dropped out of high school to go make music, you know, and that's a pretty bold step that many parents would not be okay with. You know, you start pressing vinyl, you know, when you're what, 18? It's a pretty bold move. Is there something you would love to tell your young artist self now? Like, if you could whisper back in time?
I think I was really fortunate. Like, I've always had this sense that whatever it is I want to do, that's what I should be doing. And I don't mean it like in an abstract way. I mean, like, whatever it is that you want to do, do it right now. Like, don't wait to do X and X and X and then I'll do the thing I want to do. I just had this sense from the time I was really young that, like, going to college and working on a backup plan and making sure that I was financially stable would eventually lead me to playing music, which was the thing I actually wanted to do. Like, that's what everyone tells you. You know, everyone says, like, oh, if you want to do that, here are the other things you need to do. And it's like, I don't believe that. But I do wish in my early 20s I had known every single record that comes out, you feel like things are going to be a lot bigger than they end up being. And it's like we were saying earlier, it's like, it's difficult to not see each little step as like, oh, well, that one didn't quite hit the way I thought it would. You know, it didn't quite do what I thought it would. But if you zoom out over 15 years and over, you know, a handful of records, like, I'm in a really good place now. It was all cumulative, you know, like, it all built together to kind of create this situation where now I can fly anywhere in the fucking world and go play to a room full of people. Like, that is a really, really fortunate place to be in. And I just, you know, there were just times where I was really down on myself, you know, on the fourth week of tour in fucking Omaha or something, where the show was just like dismal. And you just are like, what am I doing with my life? And I don't know. I think that any one of those things on their own, they don't mean a lot, but when you add them up all together over 10, 15 years, you start to have this total picture of like, this does work, you know?
Well, you put the time in for a reason, right? I mean, it's not glorious for all of it, if not even half of it, you know? I'm glad that, Dust Bowl Revival played
180 days on the road for 4 or 5 years in a row then when I was, you know,
yeah, totally.
28 or something.
Yeah.
When I first interviewed you on this very podcast, I think it was, I want to say 2018, 2019,
yep.
Before the world caterwauled into madness. You were in a pretty sweat-stained white tuxedo. We were backstage at a festival. We were both playing in Utrecht. And I could see that crazed, glazed-eyed look on your face of like, all right, we're a month into this very long run. And, you know, your set at that point was an extremely physical endeavor, you know?
Yeah, totally.
You're jumping back and forth between instruments. You know, you're almost like a circus ringleader. And it's funny because I was like, I wonder if I still have the notes from that interview. And the notes for I'm Fucking Crazy, which the opening track of the record, I don't even know what these notes mean, but it almost feels like a haiku. Soft-spoken rage, mental illness, love, love a madness, question mark. Beatles backgrounds would fit in the movie Joker, question mark.
I'm fucking crazy. You know that it's true. You knew it when you met me. Don't act like this is new. I don't know how to stop myself from acting so insane. Screaming like an animal and rattling your cage.
I remember that interview well, partially because I think I did we played that show and then I was doing like a little docket. You know, I think I did some other tapings that day and some other sort of print interview things, and it was just back to back, like you're saying. And I was fully sort of glazed over and fucking drunk when we did, like a really good drunk. And I remember afterwards, like the next day, waking up and being like, fuck, what did I say? You know, like, I hope that was okay.
Well, if folks want to listen to it, it's theshowontheroad.com /episodes. It's there for anyone to discover. Who knows what he said? I'll have to go back and listen to it.
I think I pressed it on aliens. I think I talked to you about it.
Well,
do you remember that?
It makes sense for the poster that's right behind you. You know,
yeah, totally. I'm kind of into it. I like aliens. I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm into it like in this like touristy way. Like, I think it's a cool. I don't think that aliens are visiting us right now, and I don't think we've ever come in contact with them, but I'm just interested, and I really like the X-Files, so I do remember us talking about music, and then I think at some point, I think I just changed the subject on a dime, and we went down sort of an alien wormhole for a minute.
As this podcast usually does. I mean, that's usually how it goes.
We're fucking crazy.
Yeah, our mandolin player who was with us for many years, who you might have met in Utrecht, his dad was one of the main editors of the X-Files.
Whoa.
He lives down the street from us, actually. That's but he so did like many of the best episodes.
I've seen that show so many times because I am, for better or worse, my wife is not this way, Many people I know are the exact opposite, but like when I fall asleep at night, I have to watch or listen to something. And generally when I say watch, I mean I put on headphones and I listen to the X-Files or
often, really?
Yeah, or I listen to music, like certain types of music, certain podcasts, but like I generally like to fall asleep with something going on. Otherwise my mind just races and I keep myself up spinning out. But through this, you know, years-long pursuit of finding content to fall asleep to, I've realized that tone and volume are super important. And like the X-Files has a tone to it that is really easy to fall asleep to. So does Star Trek Next Generation. And then, you know, obviously music, for me, it can't be too loud. It can't be too exciting, but it also can't be too boring. Like, I wouldn't really listen to, like, ambient sounds to go to sleep because I would then start thinking and spinning out. So that's part of why I made this record the way I did is I kind of wanted it to be music that you could fall asleep, that I could fall asleep to, that is that right balance of, like, nothing really crazy happens. It's not too exciting, but also there's intrigue and there's enough to keep you moving through it. And it's just totally kind of one thing. You know?
Well, those last two songs feel like almost a, like you're imploring yourself or your children to just let go and go to sleep, to just finally give up holding on to all the stuff that you've seen throughout your entire life and just let go, you know, and, you know, especially when the kids are really little, there's those weeks where you're like, I don't know if I'm ever going to sleep again, you know?
Yeah.
And it's been so awesome the last month or two where our little JJ has done this thing now where she doesn't want us to put her to bed. Yeah. Like she'll basically point at her crib and be like, okay, I'm good.
And
it's amazing. But now my wife is like, remember when she kind of wanted us to like hold her for a while? And now it's like, get out of my room.
And you said you don't want another kid, but I said the same thing a year into my first one. And then fast forward a couple years and we were like, okay, one more. Let's do one more. And then we were like, never again. That's the last one. And now Domino is almost two. He's a year and a half. And both of us are like, maybe we could do one more.
You know, there's not a lot of resources left in our planetary space. But yeah, I mean, Close Your Eyes, you could say, is a lullaby. But there's almost like a hint of anger, like behind, you know, it's like, look, my only desire for you to close your eyes, like the only thing I want in life is for you. It's like you could hear Samuel L. Jackson narrating "Go to Fuck to Sleep" or what was that book he did.
This thing happens where you put the kid down, they go in the crib, they're quiet for a couple minutes, and then you're standing outside the door and you're like, okay, they're asleep, and then they start fucking violently screaming, so you go back in, rinse, repeat, like for me 10-15 times, you know, over and over, just trying to get them to chill. And I wrote Close Your Eyes on one of those, like walking out of the door, sitting outside the room with a guitar, and just kind of like waiting for them to cry again, you know, so that you could go back in and soothe. And it totally just kind of all came out at once. And I was like, oh, cool, a little lullaby. But then, as usual, like, yeah, it's kind of, for me, all these tunes, just songs in general, like, they have to start somewhere. You know, you have to have something where you're like, okay, this is what this song's about. And it's almost like a prompt that you give yourself. And you start writing. For me, that's not super interesting. So generally, like, I'll start there. I'll start somewhere. And then things get more complex and the song becomes about other things. You know, it becomes about dreams, or it becomes about, like, that song becomes about anxiety. You know, it's like, yeah, it's a lullaby, but it begs the question, like, why do we need to be soothed to sleep? It's possible it's because the world is fucked up and wall-to-wall shit, and we need to, like, empty out our minds let all that go before we can coast into the dream world.
The hour is getting late. I know you're tired. My heart has one desire. You'd only close your eyes.
Do you remember your dreams typically, or are you a little more of a blank slate sleeper?
I remember them for like the first 5 minutes when I wake up. And if I don't write it down or tell somebody, they're kind of in that temporary memory space. Sometimes I remember them, you know, like really vivid ones, but generally I'll wake up and be like, well, that was weird. I haven't seen my third grade teacher in a long time or whatever, you know, like,
yeah.
Like those sort of things. And then that is immediately gone. And, you know, I don't think about it again ever. My wife wakes up and she remembers her dreams as if they're like a short novel. And she will read every detail vividly to me, whether I'm reading it or not. Yeah, it's just so interesting to me. That might be a skill that I just have not worked on.
I have this weird pattern where I feel like if things are in that sort of repetitive rhythm where I'm not on the road and I'm just, you know, you get up around 6:30, give the baby a bottle, you give her breakfast, you take out the dog, you know, put the baby down for her nap, you bring her to daycare, you know, clean up the house, do some stuff. It's like you feel like your days are almost the same thing. Yeah. Then all of a sudden my dreams become very vivid. It's like inserting an exciting movie because your regular programming is pretty average, you know?
I often wake up with this sensation that is like, oh, this, like, this is real. Like, I open my eyes and I like look around and I remember my home and my name and my life and stuff. And I'm like, yeah. Oh, this is the real one, because they're so completely engrossing, you know, when you're in a dream, that it just like, for that moment, you just have no concept of what reality is. And then often that feeling lives with you for the rest of the morning day, where you're just like, wait a minute, is this the real one? What? You know, like,
well, that song On the Run on the new record feels like, again, like you're always reaching out for some sort of meaning to make existence make sense, and then there's really no meaning. Like, you have to stop running to feel safe.
Yeah.
There are stretches of West Texas that don't even have a name. We stopped and took the chance to gas up every time it came. The scorching smell of summer vapor rising from the road. Strapped into a fuselage and waiting to explode. Everyone out in this desert is just passing through or lost. Dissipate into the atmosphere like smoke from the exhaust. Keep your eyes on the horizon, back turned towards the wind. At every highway's ending, find another one begins on the run.
In many ways, I think, like, we create music, we form these sequences, like, all right, we're going to make a record, then we're going to tell everybody about it, and then we're going to go on TV if we can. You know, it's like all these things that we do to, like, say, like, look, I'm important and things have meaning. Again, I think what this record is sharing is that just because you create something that you think has meaning, it doesn't necessarily have any meaning, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a hard truth to come to, but maybe the only way to full peace is to realize that you're never going to find peace, maybe, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I am not certain anything has any intrinsic meaning. Like, I think that things do have meaning. Like, you give them meaning. You know, you make...
Right.
You make the decision to, like, notice how beautiful it is outside and what a wonderful day it is, and to spend it laying in the grass. Like, you make that decision in a way to see the meaning in things. But I don't think that inherently there's any, like, real meaning to anything. You know, like, I don't know how... I struggle with... I just don't know how there can be. I don't know what would make it so that everything had some sort of linear meaning. Like, which I guess that's just how our brains work. And, you know, I don't fault anybody for thinking that way. You're born, you grow up, you have a successful career, you die happy. Everyone comes to your funeral. I don't, it's just like, and then you go to heaven. Like, I don't know. None of it makes any fucking sense to me. Like, it seems like whatever is happening right this second is the thing that's happening. It's the thing that's always happening. It's the thing that was happening when we were born, and it's still the thing that's happening afterwards. Mm-hmm. And like, our concept of time is somehow fucked up, and that's why we view it in this linear way. You know, up in the one place we really know on the road.
Running from an enemy who does not have a name, running out of money, but we must stay in the game, running from the sinking feeling that this never ends, from anything that's preordained or feeling like giving in. Yeah, it's like if you stop running, you're giving up and you're not trying and you're not going to be creating a meaningful life. Yeah. Right? I mean, it's like almost like capitalism in a way. You know, if you're not earning, if you're not constantly bringing in something, you are a failure, you know? And that's something that I've been having to deal with, I think, as a dad, as a, you know, I guess a husband or whatever, where you're like, all this stuff that I've created, like you say in yesterday's news, like this almost fake empire, has it amounted to anything, you know?
But I was trying to say earlier, and I don't think I articulated it well. It's just, I don't know, to me, it's just like making something prettier than you found it. You know, like making the world a little bit better than you found it. And like, like that is meaningful, you know, like that there's something to that, you know, like something that makes somebody genuinely surprised to be alive, you know, like that. Fuck, I've never heard this. I've never seen that. Like, that's what we're all looking for in music, is like that feeling of like, fuck, this is cool. I didn't expect this.
At least where I'm at right now, this record that you're putting out, Yesterday's News, is something that feels unexpected and needed, right? There is a zenness of just maybe just stop trying so fucking hard. Accept that maybe, honestly, like maybe, yes, maybe your biggest, boldest days are behind you. That is a thing that, like, eventually, you know, in your late 30s going, you know, it's like you have to be like, you know what, remember that time we we did that thing?
It that was great. Story, it's got to happen somewhere in the story, you know what I mean?
And you feel like, you feel like, no, I still feel young and capable.
I mean,
but you realize that, like, these kids, these people who are making new music now, who they're like 20 years younger than you.
And they're,
it's crazy.
Awesome. They're awesome. Also, like, there's, my mind is consistently blown at just like new music from 21-year-old people, that something will come, somebody will send me something, or like Spotify will suggest something. And on its surface, I want to hate it because I'm jealous. And you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
but man, there is some fucking incredible music coming out right now that is just kind of blowing my mind. And I'm like, this is great. This is what I want, is more cool music. Like, why am I mad about this? This fucking rules.
Yeah, it's funny. I have this radio show now on 88.5 here in LA. And, you know, it's an hour, so it's not like, you know, I have a million songs to pick from. But I thought when I finally would have a show, which I've always wanted to have my own radio show. And I was like, well, you know, I hate shows that play a bunch of obscure stuff that no one's ever going to find, which is exactly what I'm doing almost every time. Like, yeah. I'll play some new stuff. Like, you know, I played yesterday's news and I played, you know, some various cool stuff that's coming out. But most of the things I'm playing are these things that are totally tickling some itch in the back of my brain, like some sort of bossa nova outtake from 1968 into like some music from Mali, into some music from the south of Spain that is like hip hop flamenco. It's just like stuff that you're like, whoa, that is really cool. I don't know if anyone's liking it but me, but hopefully they will. You know,
I'm sure they are. I don't know, that's exciting to me, like the element. I did two interviews yesterday, and something that you haven't asked, but many people ask, are like, what are you listening to? And I'm like, well, it's kind of a pretentious and boring answer, depending on when you talk to me. Like now, as of like this last week, I'm deep diving into fucking Beethoven because I just am blown away with how good it is and how much there is to digest. Like, and I'm going nuts about like different versions of different orchestras and different conductors playing the same pieces. And like, it's just, it's remarkable to me. And there's just so much to learn from it.
Yeah, it is funny when Spotify, like this morning, is like, hey, there's a new release you're going to love. Andre Segovia just dropped a new track. That's He's been awesome. Dead for 40 years, but there's some Spanish guitar shit that you're going to need to hear right now. I'm like, you are correct.
Yeah.
And some of the stuff, I mean, your tuning is pretty unique on some of these songs. I mean, there is almost a medieval traveling troubadour vibe, like in a Shakespeare play.
Some of that was, I got super into, this is another weird phase. I got really into like Irish guitar players and like started going down this wormhole of like just learning tunes and trying to figure out different interesting ways to play tunes on the guitar. And so I started fucking around a lot in like open C, and then just because something didn't make sense, you know, I started making little amendments to those tunings, and like, you know, it might have a six in it, or maybe the top string is a whole step down, or like just like starting to make things a little weirder so I could voice something that I was working on. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up in this weird place now where when I'm playing shows with all these new songs, I'm like, what tuning is this now? This one has, it's a G major tuning with a minor third on the fourth string. And it also has a six. And it just sounds like blah when you just play. Yeah. Like, it just has this like really weird nothing sound when you play all the strings together. But it allows you to voice things in this really particular way, you know? And like, so yeah, I'm kind of, that was a fun sort of growth. And now in the studio with all the records we're producing, I like the joke with my business partner, he's always like, oh yeah, Robert's been in here, none of the guitars are in a normal tuning, they're all fucked up, they're like down to B flat six open or whatever, like,
right. If you could collaborate with anyone throughout history, who would it be? On a duet record?
Shit, I don't know. A duet record. I'm obsessed with Chet Baker. It might be Chet Baker.
Mm.
There's so many people who I would just like to pick their brain for 5 minutes and just like talk to about music. And I feel like I don't know what the fuck I'd do with Leonard Bernstein. You know what I mean? Like, ringer muted. Oh, now it's ringing somewhere else. What the fuck? Oh, I have two phones. Yeah, I'm sorry. I digress. What I was saying is I would love to talk to Leonard Bernstein about music. You know, like, that's something I would deeply love to do. I don't know what, I mean, like, I would be so out of my fucking depth trying to collaborate with anyone. You know what I mean? Like, right. Beethoven's the same answer. Like, I don't know what I would work on with them. I think more realistically, Nelson Riddle, I would love to go back in time and do a record with Nelson Riddle arranging. I think that would be really special. I do a ton of arranging for production stuff. And I have this book that he wrote on arranging that's really awesome. And some of what I like, I collect music books and just like sheet music, and also just books about music, stuff that people wrote, you know, lectures, shit like that. Like, I have a ton of it. And one thing that I like about it is that you're kind of communicating like back in time with somebody. Like, I feel like I know Nelson Riddle in a way from reading the foreword to his book on arranging, like just the way he talks about the pencils that he prefers to use. Like, he used, you know, like Blackwing 502s exclusively when he's writing sheet music. And like, sure enough, I'm like, go and order a bunch of Blackwing 502s. And like, I'm like, they do write better. You're right. They're fantastic pencils.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just, it's really cool that stuff is set down and recorded. And like, who knows? I hope that all the hard drives last and that our records, you know, live on. Probably the vinyl that we're making has a better chance of being found in 10,000 years than some hard drive somewhere, right? I don't know. But it's cool, the idea that things were written. I don't know that you think about like early recordings that we have. There's like, you know, like these really weird fucking discs that we've never heard of that were like this ancient recording technology. And ostensibly there were like a good amount of them out there. And now we have one and it's like halfway broken and it's in some fucking vacuum sealed chamber. And it has on it, you know, some super old recording, but we have tons of written material of that song. You know what I mean? Like, that's widely available. It's been reprinted and reproduced thousands of times. Like, and it is something that bears thinking about. Like, what happens when all the albums that we're putting on Spotify and Apple, I mean, like, this is definitely just an era of like, but where is it? Where does it go? Like, what happens in 10,000 years?
Well, think about all the music that was lost. That people probably in Mozart and Beethoven's era who didn't get the acclaim, who didn't get their music saved. I mean, there's always that story. Like, I remember we took a tour of the Globe Theater in London, and that the only reason we have Shakespeare's plays is because during a fire, this stagehand grabbed the box with all of like his leftover scripts, and they're like, well, we better grab it before the place burns down.
I love it.
Because, you know, there was just like the local sort of entertainment of the day, you know? And
if that's any indication, then like, I don't know, a long time from now, they'll be like, oh yeah, there was like a couple artists, like for our whole, let's say, I don't know, last 50 years, they'll be like, well, Beyonce, there were like a handful of artists, and they'll just remember, like, you know, like, I don't know, a couple.
Justin Bieber, Beyonce, Robert Ellis, and Stevie Wonder. I mean, those are the people we remember.
Yeah.
But you recorded, you know, on this MGM U47 mic to, you know, an MCI tape machine. The tape sound is almost a character in this record, Yesterday's News, right? It's the first thing and the last thing we hear. It's this sort of spiritual force throughout the record. I personally think it sounds, you know, I mean, it's cliche, but I think it sounds warmer than regular recording. But did you feel like there was a different essence, a different tone by recording this way? Or was it actually just recording it live without really any net to catch you that made it sound this way?
I mean, it's all of it. I like tape a lot, and we, you know, we use it on a number of records. We don't use it on every record because it's not right for everything, you know?
Like, yeah.
And then that said, we have right now 3 tape machines in there. We actually started that day when we were making this record on this Ampex 3-channel tape machine that sounds awesome. But the noise floor was just a little too high on it that day, and we're not vibing on it. So what ended up actually happening, because we really liked the way the pre sounded on the Ampex, we ran through the Ampex into the MCI. So we used, the Ampex basically as a pass-through, just like using its transformers or whatever, and then tracked onto the MCI, which usually is a pretty clean sounding machine. Like, it has a little character, but it's like fully operational, well-running machine. That day, for whatever reason, it decided to act a little fucked up. And there's a few places on the record where you can hear the tape slightly slowing down and things just getting worldly, which is it's not typical for that machine. But at the end of the session, listening back, I was like, oh my God, that's so rad. I'm so glad that happened. You know, like,
yeah.
And now it's a part of the performance, you know? And it was a really wonderful surprise because we didn't track with headphones either. So I didn't know that any of that was happening until going back up in the control room and listening, like replaying the tape and being like, wait a minute, is the playback fucked up? And then playing it like 3 times and be like, no, it just did that. That's how it's recorded. It's fucking awesome.
Well, it always amazes me, like when you listen to classic songs that you've heard a million times, Beatles tracks, you know, like Let It Be, like there's mistakes in these songs, right? I mean, there's like a wrong chord that Paul plays in that take, but it is the take, you know? It was that good to the point where we're like, well, I didn't go to the 5 there, but
doesn't matter.
We'll only be singing it for the next 50 years.
It would have been worse if we fixed it.
Measure yourself against a feather or a stone. Have you ever been convinced or pretended to know? This is just a waiting room.
Now that you have a bar that you are, you know, part proprietor of, do you remember the coolest, weirdest bar you've ever been to in your travels in the world? Like, if you could go to one bar before you die, where would that be?
I know immediately, because I just was obsessed, and it's kind of what we want to do here eventually. It's like in Japan, in Tokyo, there was this this little bar in Golden Guy, which is, you know, the street with tons of tiny bars. And there's a bar that was just called Jazz, or at least there was a sign out front that just said Jazz.
And,
you know, we walked in, it's tiny, they only have Japanese whiskey, and when you sit down, they put the album sleeve of the record that's being played. And when I sat down, it was one of my favorite all-time Bill Evans records. And there's maybe 3 other people in there, and just like right in front of me is like not a super popular one either, like kind of a weirder record. And then I was like, okay, I'm in. And I sat there for as long as I possibly could, like the whole night. And just the bartender would just come over and show you the record, and you like read the credits and just get hammered on whiskey. And it was like, this is the best concept.
Let's go out with the song Wait. Obviously, it can be interpreted in a lot of ways, about losing someone, or about, again, having to let go maybe of your former self, maybe of your ambition, maybe of a future that you thought you would have. I think during these last 3 years, we've all had to let go of our previous selves. What were you processing when you started laying that one down?
I know what I think it's about after the fact, but in the moment, I don't know how much control I really had. I think it was just sort of stream of consciousness You know, like, it is visually about someone dying, you know, and I had particular things that I was thinking about in that regard, but I don't know where, I don't know. It's kind of like all this beautiful dream of, like, that last couple days in someone's life.
Wait. I'm not ready to go home.
Man, well, I really really dig this record.
Thank you for having me. It's wonderful to see you again.
Yeah, man. Are you coming to LA anytime soon? Do you know?
I think late summer, maybe early fall. I'm not sure. I don't think we have anything confirmed, but I'm working on some stuff.
Hollywood Bowl. Yeah.
Yeah, something huge. Fucking you.
Headlining.
Yeah.
It's gonna be like a White Snake concert, you know, but with just nylon string guitar.
Solo acoustic guitar, mic'd.
I mean, McCabe's Guitar Shop down the street from me would be awesome place for this
music. I love that place. Yeah, I love that place. That's high on the list. I'll keep you posted. Talk soon. Thank you.
All right, bye.
Bye.
There he goes, Mr. Robert Ellis. Thank you to him for getting on the line from his bar, studio, music venue in Fort Worth. His website is texaspianoman.com. He's going to be playing some shows promoting that new record, Yesterday's News. He'll be playing at the Mohawk in Austin Saturday, and then he'll be going to Brooklyn and Denver, Oklahoma City, San Antonio, Houston, Dallas, all over the place. And if you want to listen to that 2018 episode, it's pretty wild. We talk about aliens a lot. You can go to theshowontheroad.com/episodes. It's been a bit of a weird month with my group Dust Bowl Revival being off in May, but in June, we are back at it. We're playing in Duluth, Minnesota on June 8th, playing the 9th at the Parkway Theater in Minneapolis, and then going to my hometown, Evanston Space in Chicago on the 10th, and then the 11th at Collectivo, the back room in Milwaukee. And then we got shows outside Park City in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, near Bozeman, Montana, and up at the Ponderoo Fest in Oregon. Please check that out, dustbowlrevival.com. If you have been listening to this show for a long time, or if you're just making it for the first time, welcome. You can leave us a kind review. It really helps get the word out and to spread the algorithm far and wide. And you can check out our YouTube channel, has full interviews. Iris Dement, Ani DeFranco, all sorts of cool people I talk to on there for hours at a time. And if you are a truly kind-hearted person, you can look for the donate button. It's actually a link on the iTunes page. Red Circle will bring you to a little page where you can throw money into the air and help podcasts like ours keep surviving. As always, The Show on the Road is written, produced, and edited by yours truly, Z Lupitin, and we are part of the BGS Podcast Network. Stay safe, stay creative, and we'll see you on the trail.
Bowie, Dylan, Marley. You've heard the names and maybe you've heard their songs, but what about the stories behind the records that made titans of music like these so universally loved and important? Join me, Josh Adam Myers, host of The 500, as each week I go through a different album from Rolling Stone Magazine's 500 Greatest Albums list from 2012 with an incredible lineup of comedians, actors, and musicians talking about how the music has impacted their lives. New episodes of The 500 come out every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.